Welcome to the Mastermind Your Launch podcast, broadcasting live on Business Radio X. Your place for weekly entrepreneurial lessons from Atlanta's most inspiring technology startups. And now your host, Stephanie Diaz.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Mastermind Your Launch on Business Radio X. I'm your host, Stephanie Diaz, and today we are broadcasting live from the Roswell Infinity Studio at Digital Ignition. And welcome back to the work week after the long weekend. Did you guys enjoy yourself over the 3 day?
Yeah, it was great. Actually, my birthday was on Friday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. So it was fun. But yesterday kind of got rained out though. So that was unfortunate.
It did. Like, yeah.
We went to a pool party and it was just by 2 o'clock, it was just everything was shut down.
It wasn't a pool party after the rain.
No.
It was a shower party, right?
Yeah. Well, I know we're all, you know, transitioning back into the work week. Although a lot of us entrepreneurs probably did a little bit of working. It's really hard to shut it off. Yeah. But super, want to let the listeners know that we are live here in studio and we'll be live tweeting. So follow at North Fulton BRX if you want to get a glimpse of the behind the scenes here in studio. And I'm excited because today we have two members of the Drofika team that I had the pleasure of meeting at Atlanta Startup Battle. So welcome to CEO Kevin Mobilade and to the CMO, Nick Chandarana. Guys, Yay. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Before we dive into Drofika and the amazing things that you guys are doing with drone technology, why don't you share with us a little bit about yourself, starting with you, Kevin.
Okay, so my name is Kevin Mobilade, CEO of Drofika Technologies. My background is in computer science and business. So I went to Mercer University, did an MIS there. After I graduated, I worked in business intelligence, so data architecture, automation, data analytics for the past 3 years or so. And through working internally as like an entrepreneur within the companies that I worked for, I realized the power that data has to better help managers make better data-driven decisions. And I wanted to take that application that I learned and the solutions that I created and apply it to my own venture. So I kind of was struggling to figure out like what problem I wanted to solve or whatnot. And I was actually sitting down with a family member one day and they actually used to own a construction company. So I started kind of learning more about that process of construction and building and how that all works together and seeing a lot of the pitfalls that lack of information, lack of the ability to have clear understanding of where the progress is in at the current state causes major issues down the road. And, you know, as any entrepreneur, once you find out one problem, you kind of dig into it, you find bigger and bigger and bigger issues that kind of compound over across state to state, country to country. Like this is actually like a worldwide issue. And that was kind of like my inspiration to try and solve that issue in my own way.
Huge. Well, it was actually my first company was a construction consulting company. So we'll dive more into that in a second. Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I hail from the other side of the world-ish. I come from London. My background has been in UI and UX for the past couple of years. I studied over there as well. So my background has always been trying to get data to customer. How can I, you know, leverage that data in a way that customers will understand it? So teaming up with Kevin a couple of years ago to start Drofika was like, okay, we have all this data. We know there's a problem. How do we get it to them?
Right.
And what formats will they understand? Because as you know, the construction industry is a little bit backwards sometimes.
Well, yeah. And adopting new technology is not something that they do, you know, very easily.
Correct.
And yeah, I mean, you could have two platforms with the exact same, you know, solving the same problem, but how they interface with it could be the difference between how much, you know, how well they adopt it or if they just, you know, kind of toss it to the side.
Exactly.
How did you two meet?
So we actually met about 4 years ago. Deshank's also in the background there. So I don't know if you remember Hypopotamus, back when they used to be an actual like incubator space in the Biltmore. So there was a summer 2013, they had like a like startup summer like thing
school.
Or whatnot, school or right. whatnot. Yeah. I was finishing, I was taking school, summer off from school. Nick was summer off from school. Everyone was summer off from school. And we were literally just sitting at three different tables every day, like working on our individual things. I was doing an internship for a travel startup. And I think one day we just like said, hey, And, you know, we kind of vibed and, you know, we've just always been friends pretty much since then. So as I started Jofika about 2 years ago, you know, kind of doing everything on my own or whatnot, like it gets to the point where it's like, okay, you can't do this by yourself. So mm-hmm. Nick and then also Chris were the guys that I thought about as far as like, hey, like let's rope them in and see what we can make of it.
It's so nice when you get to take an idea, mm-hmm. you know, turn it into a business, but then also when you get to do that with people that you just enjoy being around and mm-hmm. that you have a lot of respect for their talents, you get to make mm-hmm. them a part of the entire team. I'm sure that's been, you know, a really rewarding part of this whole journey.
Yeah, like mindset is definitely important to have on the team for sure.
Huge.
And it doesn't make it like work after a while. It's just like, all right, we've got a bunch of stuff to do. Let's get it done. That strenuous pressure you get from corporate per se doesn't exist.
Yeah. The politics,
the bureaucracy, it's eliminated. It's just like, oh, we need to get this done. We're going to do it like this. What do you think? Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Let's get it done. Done. All right.
Right.
On to the new one.
Because you feel like you're really on the same team. Like, we know we're all working towards this goal. So that infighting and things like that. I mean, I'm sure that there are disagreements, challenging, you know, mm-hmm. opinions, things like that. But you work through it so much differently.
Correct.
I love it.
Yeah. It's definitely raw because it's not like, you know, corporate where you have to be political about everything. It's like, look, I have this idea about how I think this will benefit the company. Let me go, you know, create a use case real quick, mm-hmm. present it to the team, and just tell me the honest truth. Do you feel like it's going to work or not? And we put it on the marketplace and see. You just throw ideas against the wall and then see what, you know, sticks, because there's not enough money or time to sit around and like drink tea and like be permanent.
Hey, leave the tea alone.
Let's execute, you know?
Exactly. Well, and because, you know, you are a startup, I mean, the idea that's going to, you know, take you to that next level could come from anywhere. You have to be open-minded and at least, you know, like, let's explore this. I love that. So going back to, you know, you have this idea, you want to solve a problem, and now you've identified the construction industry as maybe a target market. Mm-hmm. What were some of your first steps in that time period?
So for me, I knew I understood the data side of things, the ETL, the transformations, you know, applying algorithms to the data. I knew all that stuff, right? But I knew of it based off of just transactional databases, so like Oracle, SQL, or whatnot. I didn't know what kind of source of data can we apply to the construction space, because you're dealing with the outside world. You know, you're not dealing with, you know, ones and zeros and, you know, in a table or fact table in a database. You're dealing with like, okay, this is what it looked like today. This is how it changed over time. How can we like track those changes? And then how can we also apply analytics to the real world? So volumetric analysis and all those different things like that. So I basically sat down and just started reading a bunch of white papers, on, you know, volumetrics, on orthomosaics, on photogrammetry, you know, learning more and more about it. I would literally leave my I would go on my lunch break to like a Starbucks or a cafe or whatnot with like white paper that I would print off, and don't tell anybody, print off using the office's printer, and literally just read and eat and read and eat and just kind of just immerse myself in it. And then from there, I started looking at, looking at these UAV technology that was starting to come up. This is around like 2015 or whatnot. And seeing that there are a lot of people doing DIY stuff with it. You know, we can use it for like maybe transporting goods and services from here to there, you know, blood, different things like that. So I was talking to people who were kind of big in the UAV spaces, reaching out to companies who built UAVs or unmanned aerial vehicles. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one, the company that sticks out to mind is, am I spacing on their name right now? The Falcon 8, Identify Technologies, and the Falcon 8. They're a company out in Europe, they're Netherlands. So I actually got some money from a cousin of mine, you know, told him my idea or whatever, and literally flew to the Netherlands to meet with this company and learn more about the Falcon 8. And actually, like, I went from like being in a cubicle, you know, staring out like on a rainy day like this, like, you know, doing work stuff, but also thinking about these ideas and reading these white papers, to a pig farm in Zundert, Netherlands. I don't know if you know much about Zundert, but it's where I think it's Vincent van Gogh, the painter, mm-hmm. that's where he's from. It's a town where he actually lived and stuff. It's a little town off on the coast of Belgium. Mm-hmm. And I was on a pig farm in Zundert, Netherlands with these two, you know, Dutch guys and their Falcon 8.
Like, how did I get here?
How did you get there?
You know? But it was cool. Like, you know, seeing about, you know, just, you know, learning how to fly it, getting licensed with it or whatnot. Because I thought that, okay, I'm going to go to these construction facilities and like actually like be there by myself, like flying this thing, and then come home and do the data stuff or whatever. But that was obviously not very scalable. But mm-hmm. that's how you have to kind of go through it.
Of course,
manually. Grassroots. Before you can automate anything.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. love it. Well, and thank you for painting that picture too. Like I can, you know, really just imagine you like in your, you know, at your desk one day, you know, and then you're like flying across the world and,
yeah,
and,
Lufthansa.
and that's a really exciting time. Like for any, like no matter how far down this road you go, you'll always go back to like those moments in the beginning, you know? Yeah. Because it's your first taste of, you know, really putting yourself out there on the ledge. And, you know, I've taken an idea and I'm actually following it and I'm putting it into action. Mm-hmm. Something that so many people go through life, just never even just taking that first step. So for the listeners, if they haven't kind of wrapped their brains around Drofika just yet, it's aerial, it's these drones, and then you're collecting data, and then you're providing, you're analyzing that, providing it back to these construction companies to help them for their projects.
Yeah, everything is fully automated.
So can you give us kind of like a real world example of what a construction project, like how they would use this technology today?
Okay. So there's actually a company that we're working with right now. I won't mention their name because we're still in negotiations or whatnot. But so they are moving. So they're moving large amounts of earth. So they get paid by the cubic yards of earth that that's moved on their project. And specifically, this earth that they're moving has is contaminated by lead. So it's a big project to basically clean up the entire area and basically turn it into a nice like green space or whatnot. So there's kind of like a dirt brokerage like economy in all over the world, but in Atlanta it's like a dirt brokerage. Like, okay, well, I've got this topsoil, you know, I'll pay you like $15 per cubic yard or whatnot. So what they currently do is the trucks that they use, they know like the volume of that truck, right? Because it's just like, I know how much volume is in this bottle of water, right? And they basically just estimate, okay, well, we think we have X amount of volume in this truck and that's how much we're going to build the guys that we're basically sending this off to. But they don't actually know the true down to the single integer amount of earth that they actually have. So they could be making more money or they could be losing money. So with what we do is on the site themselves, they have a UAV that our system basically automates fully. And then it just wakes up at a certain time in the morning, whenever time they set, and it flies a given mission or area, right? And then from there, it captures images of those area and then tags the images with the longitude and latitude. From there, we've built out APIs that send those images back to our server, and they open up their dashboard and they see their physical site in space. And then from there, they can now draw around the stockpile themselves and know, okay, this is how much cubic yards are specifically in this stockpile today, Tuesday at 12:30. And then they can now compare that to Thursday, the following week, and see how it's changed over time accurately. So they know exactly how much earth they have today as they move forward in the project progression.
That's incredible. How long have they been using this? Or you guys are still in negotiations now?
Yeah, we've done multiple use cases with them. Mm-hmm. So now they're basically like onboarding us as like one of their subcontractors for a bigger project that they're getting ready to start up. But we've been working with them since about March or so.
Yeah, March. Yeah.
And what would their alternative be? I mean,
they have a, like I said, they have the truck, they know the volume of the truck, and they have a clicker. One truck,
estimating.
Two truck,
yeah,
three
very
truck,
old
four
school.
Truck. Five truck, that's basically it. Even too with companies that own stockpiles of like, so limestone. So you want to order like 57 or it was 87 grade limestone or whatnot. Yep. Same thing. They do the pretty much the same thing. Like they have a stockpile back at the quarry and they fill up a truck and then they weigh the truck and then they send it off. But then how much do you have in the original stockpile? They don't know. Mm. They basically just have a guy fly over with a plane maybe once a quarter who would do some type of photogrammetry or whatnot, but it's not up to date on a regular basis. It's once every 3 months. And then they just say, okay, well, this is how much we have and that's how much we'll say we have. So we've been in talks with a couple of stockpile companies as well to be able to help them know exactly how much they have. Because sometimes you might be selling what you don't actually have. You might say you have 6,000, you really have 5,000. Then what are you going to do?
Right. So this is a little bit different than, you know, even what we kind of talked about at Atlanta Startup Battle. Mm-hmm. Then it was more, you know, construction project based. And now it's more of these, you know, vendors and making sure that they have the resources to analyze their supply and bill appropriately. Have you guys taken a little bit of a pivot, seen some new opportunities? Or
You can and you can't. So an interesting fact about Drofika is actually we started our operations on agriculture and farms. So my family back home specialized in farms. So we came up with the technology. We had an idea what we want to utilize Drofika with, so AKA construction. But I was like, hang on a minute. I've got access to major, you know, landscapes of farms readily available to assess. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to a couple of farmers and they're like, all right, these are our problems. Farms are huge. How do we manage this? How do we monitor this? How do we, you know, get a knowledge of if this crop is in good health or not? So we actually use the drone technologies to analyze that first. So we gave them a platform where they can see the entire farm on this laptop screen. And we told them, look, you should farm here. This is your land. This is not your land. So you can't farm here. So in the sense of pivoting since, you know, we last met is we have pivoted, but we haven't as well. So we've added more things basically. So previously we were just focusing on, you know, helping construction companies calculate distances and volumes. Now we're trying to give the whole thing to them so they can make more accurate decisions. So as we go along and as we have more use cases, you know, being built on Drofika, there's going to be tons more stuff.
Oh, sure. And it's also, it's a blessing and a curse.
Of course.
Because your application can be used in so many different industries for so many different things. Mm-hmm. There are so many, I'm sure, ideas that you guys are getting every single day. Oh, we could do this, we could do that. Yeah. And, but you have to one foot in front of the other, you know, niche down at first, get some use cases, get some traction and allow that to drive your next steps. Well, congrats on all of the progress. I'd love to chat a little bit about Atlanta Startup Battle.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, tell me what inspired you guys to apply.
So that was the second time we applied for Atlanta Startup Battle. And I always like to say that it's not a no, it's just not now.
Right.
Yeah.
So we applied, was it fall of 2016?
Yeah, October,
right,
November.
The first one.
Yeah, like we hadn't launched our app yet. We didn't have any, you know, users. So we didn't have, we had a portal, but it wasn't fully up there yet. So, you know, it's justifiable that, you know, we got rejected from it. But like I said, it was more small motivation to, okay, how do we improve? How do we, you know, get to that next level that they can actually take us, you know, seriously, at least to make it to the top 10. So yeah, applied a second time. Right. You know, we finished the app, the Android version of it, launched it. You know, we have like, you know, about 40,000 or so users. We have 40,000 followers on social media. So we just use that to like push people downloading it in multiple countries to basically test out the platform. Like it's 3 o'clock here in Atlanta in the morning, but somewhere in South Africa, someone's downloaded it. They've flown their drone with it automatically. They sent us images. We've gotten this data. So it works without us having to actually
be awake
and
manage it, you know. So that's the main hurdle. Okay, can you put it on water? Will it float? Right, so we've got that portion down. I think that was what kind of gave them enough information. Okay, well, let's bring these guys in and talk to them in person. So,
and I mean, what was your big takeaway from that experience?
God, there were many. It was fun. It was nice talking to people outside of the industry. It was nice talking to someone who had no idea about what drones can do and the applications of them. Because once you're in this space, all you hear is drones this, drones that. You're saturated with, you know, internal and collective data.
Like a little bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you get the opportunity to talk to someone who knows nothing about UAVs or nothing about construction, it's liberating because you see their eyes just like magically wide open. It's like, you can do that?
Right.
We can do that.
But at the same time, too, it's also, I mean, a big part of this startup battle was your pitch. And I'm sure having to talk to so many people who didn't understand the lingo, weren't in the industry, you know, made you think about how am I talking? How am I describing this? You know, how am I communicating the vision? Because it's not always easy, especially for startups when you have something that's so different, you know, those reference points aren't there to really think about how you're talking about that. Did your messaging change? Did your pitch change at all during that experience?
100%. I remember saying to Kevin several times before the pitch, like, great, carry on, but these words need to change. Or you know, you need to say 100 billion with, you know, 20 times more passion.
Yeah, I'll give a shout out to Kevin Sadlin at pitch practice over at ATV.
Yeah.
I went to a lot of his pitch practice, not for this, for Tech Square Labs, but I was going there like September, October, August. You know, I would leave work
in your lunch
break and go over there real quick, pitch, and then go back to my work.
I love it.
You know, but I like the fact that his main thing was about telling a story with your pitch and finding the lowest common denominator for your audience. Because, you know, we can talk about like, you know, UAVs and big data and algorithms and volumetrics, but nobody cares about that. You know, nobody's going to remember that stuff. So for me, it forced me to, okay, take all of this, you know, convoluted knowledge that you know about that for you is just like, you know, okay, this is stuff if I read about every single day, I know about it. This is obvious, right? Everyone should know this, right? And make it, you know, relatable to anybody off of the street, you know? So that was really the big challenge with making it relatable and making it stick. So that way they not only remember the pitch, but they remember us, You know, because really what it matters is like you remember the team afterwards,
right.
You know.
Right. Well, and also, you know, a big piece to pull out of that is if you make it simple and memorable, then not only do they remember you, but it's really easy for them to talk about you to other people.
1,000%, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you can start to get some momentum and you start to meet people. Oh, yes, I've heard about you, you know, because it was so easy for someone to share what you're doing in that vision.
Yeah.
And you can take that a step further is that as soon as they understand the product we have, the mission we're on, and they understand it thoroughly, when they talk to someone in this space that could potentially use the product, they're like, okay, I know someone who does this. Or I think I do. And then they get in contact and we talk to them and be like, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. This is what we do. So therefore, a branch of networks open up.
100%.
Because you'll notice sometimes when people are pitching their product or service, people who they're pitching it to don't really understand it. And you can see that. They're like,
yeah, their eyes glaze over.
Right, big data analytics. Like,
yeah.
It's scary for a person who's not in the space.
Especially for construction, yeah.
All right, so when you break it down into very, very, you know, it's to its core and people understand it, it does wonders for your business.
Right, and then you're actually seizing that opportunity.
Correct.
Because, I mean, those are some missed opportunities if you have the stage for 5-6 minutes, however long, and the people walk away still not knowing what you do and the value that you bring. I love that. So getting back to your Instagram following, because you have some huge numbers. I assume that's kind of your biggest platform is Instagram?
Just getting
followers?
Yeah, words out and stuff. Yeah, that's probably the biggest one that we have, yeah.
So almost 40,000 followers on Instagram. Yeah. So we were talking initially more about a commercial application.
Right.
Talk to us about this kind of like consumer-facing side.
So Instagram, I run the Instagram. For me, it was just, you know, with social media, it's the easiest and it's free. I mean, obviously, you don't have money to spend on, like, you know, advertising and stuff like that. But just to get access to the market, the target market that, you know, we want to, you know, service at the end of the day. So, you know, I started on Instagram probably that summer, 2015, fall of 2015.
Yeah.
With like hashtag drone, like hashtag, you know, drone, you know, whatever.
And it's all about the hashtag.
I remember when hashtag drone had like maybe like 200,000, you know, and that was like the biggest hashtag in the drone space. I like Instagram because you can bucket everything. Like you can be about dogs, cats, you know, food, restaurants, hotels, and you have your own little world that you can kind of dive into visually on Instagram. So drones, it was like, you know, 200,000.
Right.
Now hashtag drone has like 2 million or 4 million. So it shows the market, you know, growing over time. But I kind of consider Instagram, growing an Instagram, to be just like growing a startup. It's the same, you know, principles at hand. Like you have, you know, an idea about what you want to do. You have a market that you're trying to service. You're trying to find, you know, value that, you know, kind of hits that product market fit. So I would, you know, post images and I would learn, okay, they like this type of images compared to that type of image. Okay, they like it when it's more of a product image of a drone as opposed to like a person with a drone, right? Or they like a specific type of UAV from a specific vendor. You know, that's what really kind of hits the nail on the head with these followers from all over the world compared to whatever. So that kind of iteration of trial, fail, over time, you kind of get into a groove. And then, you know, I'd go from, you know, having like 200 likes a picture to like 2,000 or 3,000, or some would go super viral. I remember this one video I posted had like 50,000 views or whatnot.
Wow.
You know, just as me, like in my car, like
retiring.
Posting a picture.
No, just kidding.
Yeah, there's all of a sudden, I wake up as 50,000 views.
55,000,
like,
I remember.
All over the world. And, you know, it's just like, oh, shoot, like, it's kind of cool. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's good to see, you know, what you guys are putting out there is having such a positive response and obviously bringing just that awareness that we were talking about back to your company.
For sure, yeah.
So if there is something from your journey to date that has really been like a lesson learned, you know, maybe it's from a challenge or a success, but, you know, it really got you thinking differently once you were on the other side of it. Would you share that story or that takeaway?
Yeah. So one thing I've learned from this whole experience and, you know, many more experiences to come is one is better than zero. Just do. Because you're going to spend so much time pondering what to do and strategizing how to do it that you're not going to actually do it.
Yeah.
So you're going to sit in a room with your co-founders, your buddies, like, okay, how do I do this? All right, this is how it gets done. But then at that point, you just go out and do it the next day or the next hour. A lot of people just spend too much time trying to strategize too much.
Yeah.
So I really, really passionate about just getting stuff done. Even if you get it wrong. If you get it wrong, fine. You know what you did wrong. You can just pivot and turn it right. But the promise people have to themselves is that they'll do it once they, you know, feel a bit more comfortable.
Right.
And you got to jump out of that comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where magic happens. And that's what you got to do and be all and kill all.
I love that. You know, I tell a story about, you know, when I first launched the podcast
right.
2 years ago, in a speech that I give, you know, I talk about confidence.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, when I recorded that first episode, I didn't have confidence. The confidence comes afterwards.
Right.
Once you get it done, you know, then you can look back and say, I did it. And maybe it's, you know, was it 100%? You know, was it the best that's ever been done? I don't know. But it's done.
If you don't try, you'll never know.
Right. And then as you, you know, continue moving along your path, step after step, then you, that's where you gain your confidence. If you're waiting in that bubble of no action, thinking confidence is just going to come to you, that's not where it's going to hit you. Yeah. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Kevin, how about you?
I would say the importance of crafting your own mental space. Because I think one thing that I've learned through this whole process is that this startups, anything that you do in life is more of a mental challenge than anything else. And when I say that is meaning that you have to basically just control yourself. Right. And so like what I do is, you know, I'm always listening to, you know, podcasts. I'm always listening to like educational material, like Audible is my favorite app on my phone, you know, listening, reading books or whatnot. And it kind of helps you to keep an even keel as you're going through it, because things that you think should take a week or 2 weeks might take 3 months. Right. Like, and that mental struggle of like, why isn't it not done?
Right.
You know, da 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 da, like, what am I doing? You've got to just basically like just calm down, you know, and just, you know, control yourself as you go through it and just have confidence in yourself. And then I think the second thing is also just think really, really, really big. Because when we first started, I didn't, you know, think that we'd be doing, you know, what we're doing right now.
Right.
And now that we're doing what we're doing right now, you know, we've come up with, you know, new ideas and things that we're thinking around with that, you know, can apply on a global level because it's a global product. You know, like there are construction companies all over the world. There's farming companies, you know, companies all over the world. And even the changes in the marketplace with what we're seeing with like, you know, the reduction in greenhouse gases or whatnot, there's multiple plays there that definitely could be available in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years to develop technology for, you know, and that's now you're dealing with like governments of countries that using this technology to help reach standards that they've mandated and signed off on in front of the whole world, you know? So I think by just kind of controlling yourself, creating that mental space that you're, you know, okay, every day I wake up, you know, you eat your good breakfast, you know, work out. You know, I'm big on cold showers. I feel like if you can take a cold shower in the morning, like a freezing cold shower, and then you can do anything throughout the day because you've already, you know, felt pain in the morning. So whatever is going to come your way, it's not going to be that bad as, you know, a freezing cold shower in the morning, right? So I think you just do through that and then you think big and you should be good.
I love that. I'm huge with Audible. What are, like, do you have a book recommendation?
Yeah, I can pull it out right now.
Yeah, let's see.
See what I've recently completed.
That's what they don't teach you in Harvard Law School.
Yeah, well, no, I'm still reading that. What they don't teach you in Harvard Law School. That's a good one. So let's see. Different by Young Mi Moon. So she's a Harvard marketing professor, and she talks about how do you differentiate your product from the herd, basically. She gives three examples. Either you're going to be Uber, you're going to be Snapchat, or you're going to be Southwest. So Southwest, they like reduce the amount of features that they give to their customers. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, take it or leave it. This is what it is.
Yeah, economical.
Snapchat is more of a, like a reverse product. So, you know, with Facebook is huge, right? When it's growing and growing and growing, well, how does Snapchat survive? Well, because of the fact that they didn't save your data. You know, Facebook, you know, on Twitter, you can read tweets from 2011, 2012, Facebook, same thing, posts or whatnot. With Snapchat, you've got 10 seconds, maybe 24 hours, and then it's gone.
Right.
So that's how they reversed away from, you know, Facebook, and that's when Facebook wanted to buy them, right? And then Uber, in which you're basically just like, with their price surging, you know, okay, if you can't afford it, too bad. Like, this is what the price is. Or if you look at like maybe like high-end luxury, like diamonds or whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, diamond is a diamond is a diamond is a diamond. But, you know, if it's a Tiffany compared to like Jared or whatnot, you know, they basically, this is $10,000 because of whatever. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it.
Right.
That's a really good one. Traction, everyone reads Traction. That's a good one. Inbound marketing. I really liked Ready, Fire, Aim. 0 to 100 million. I like the fact that he kind of broke down from like an engineering perspective, like how do you create an engineer or sales organization to give you repeatable returns on your revenue that you can kind of predict.
Right.
And we're kind of getting to that stage now. So, but I read it about 3-4 months ago. I read it like twice or whatnot, and I really liked it. Then the automatic customer is just about subscription services and why that's kind of like the best thing right now. I think like Amazon Prime alone makes like $1 billion each year.
Mm-hmm.
Like by itself, it was, if its own company by itself, Amazon Prime is $1 billion a year.
That's incredible.
So just talking about subscriptions, but yeah, I'm all about Audible. If you've got any like Audible tokens you want to pass over.
Exactly. I mean, and wherever, if I'm driving, mm-hmm. if I'm, you know, doing groceries, you know, any chance that I get, just turn on a book and have something positive and helps, you know, kind of build up that confidence, keeps your head right, in this game. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kevin and Nick, thank you so much for being here. If one of the listeners wants to check out Drofika, where should they go?
What's my Instagram, Kevin? Go on.
So the Instagram is at Drofika. That's Drofika. The website is www.drofika.co, Drofika.co. And then our emails are kevin@drofika.co, nick@drofika.co. And then our CTO, who's not here right now, is chris@drofika.co. So if you want to email us.
Any questions, we'd be happy to answer them. You know, if you're confused about anything, just please email us or hit us up on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Please do.
Love it.
Do a demo or whatever you guys want to see.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Rock on. Well, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you so
Congratulations
much for having us.
On all of your success to date. Looking forward to big things because you're thinking big. I know.
Of course he is.
Has to be a CEO's job.
Right? That's right. Good. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. And remember that today is a great day to face forward and mastermind your launch.